See, now I'm going to want to hear that whole song. That's the thing about The Cure. You drop a little bit of Cure in there, and then you're going to need a lot of Cure. So now I'm going to have to listen to that this afternoon. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you so much for letting us invade your ear hole. Brian and Nisha are doing stuff today, so they will not be on the call with Paul and I. But we're going to hold down the fort. We're going to try and keep things, you know, at top level, if you will. We are celebrating Martin Luther King Day, and hope everyone is having a wonderful MLK Day, I would say. And without any further ado, let's get right to our wonderful guest. Paul, how are you doing today?
Doing terrific. Thank you, William.
All right. Now, we got to, you know, with this question, we've got to ask you on twofold, both you and your clients. But what's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
You know, I think with the work that we do, which is in trying to help our clients create that best-in-class workplace culture, and particularly focused around the subject and the quantifiable quality of respect, it's the number of organizations that say respect is really important or respect for people is really important, but who do very little of anything to actually support that within their cultures. And in fact, the examples of senior leaders behaving poorly, incredibly poorly, it just never ceases to amaze me. The good news is that means there's lots of opportunity, but the bad news is there's a lot of organizations that are misfiring simply because of the way they treat people internally.
How much of, and this is a Generation X comment, so how much of as respect is subjective?
That's a great question. Respect can be subjective in the sense that how we actually behave around each other to create the feeling of respect may be a little bit different, both between generations and even across cultures. But here's where respect is really, really unique as a goal. Respect feels the same way to every person on this planet. It's a really, really easy target to shoot for. It doesn't feel any different whether you're 35 or whether you're 95 or 25. Question is what it takes to actually create that experience for the people that we work with. And that's where it gets a little bit challenging, because that's where it takes an investment in getting to know each other at a much more than superficial level.
What do you think the kind of the tenets of a new workplace expectations? What do you, if I were to say something like that, what are these new expectations that people have when they're just entering the workplace?
New expectations for those just entering the workplace, it really does vary from company to company. And I think you have a lot of companies that leverage technology differently and more effectively or less effectively than others. So in terms of expectations about how we engage each other, it's really all over the map. And it depends on, I think, industry as much as anything. You have manufacturing environments where people still work very much side by side, see each other, interact face to face, maybe the same thing in an office environment. But then you have other organizations where people do the majority of their communication online. And so it really does differ. I don't think you could make any real broad statements that categorize everybody entering the workforce right now.
Do you say, some of the, it's too populist of a thought to say that you can't have a cult company without having great culture, but I still think that in, you know, how people operate, we could probably never talk about it publicly, but the way that people operate is they look at culture as a nice to have, not a need to have, and I'm sure that drives you crazy. It drives me crazy, so we're two of a kind here, but how do we convince the people, and again, they're never going to say this publicly, they're never going to say, oh, we don't really give a shit about culture. They would never say that. But at the same thing, their actions never really support culture or support even within that support respect. So how do we get them over to understanding and to getting it?
Well, I came from a Fortune 50 environment long before I started legacy business cultures almost 20 years ago. I was a product of the Allied Signal Organization. And so I'm really familiar with the kind of that whole Fortune 50, Fortune 500 mindset. I don't really believe that we should pursue anything, including cultural initiatives, unless they really do something meaningful and significant to improve our productivity and, if I'm a for-profit business, my profitability. And I think the research right now is absolutely unequivocal to the point that if we don't acknowledge the impact of culture on our profitability and productivity, then we are, as a leadership, as a person in leadership, I'm not doing my job, plain and simply, and I probably shouldn't be in a leadership position. I'll give you one example that I think is new evidence, relatively new evidence, that is changing the way we have these conversations, and it's the science, the field of neuroscience. A lot of the work that we do is geared towards senior leaders and leverages new research in the field of neuroscience because that gives us very unequivocal data points about how my behavior of other people, either at my level or below my level, directly affects the ability of their brain to do high-quality work. And I can't ignore that information. So while there are many leaders who organically understand the importance of that, how they treat other people and the kind of culture that that creates within the organization, there are many that don't get that organically and intuitively. So by bringing science into the conversation and showing specifically how it affects the way my neurons fire, how it affects the neurotransmitters that are released in my brain, and how that affects my health and my ability to be innovative, that data is pretty unequivocal at this point in time. So if it's available and I'm ignoring it, I probably shouldn't be in a leadership position because it's affecting our profitability.
I guess you're absolutely right. It's like, here's all the logic. I mean, what else do you want us to do? What do you do with bad apples? How should a company treat? Because even in senior leadership, you know the people I'm talking about. There'll be the gal or the guy that just it's almost like they're poison or some type of cancer within the organization. What's the appropriate treatment of those folks?
I will give you a great personal example and a current example. There's a prospective client that we're courting right now in the D.C. area that has, for a small company, you're gonna think this is amazing. They have a 48% annual turnover with a staff of about 50 people. Very highly thought of company. And the primary reason their turnover is so high is because they have two or three bad apples who have been entrenched, who have contributed to a very abrasive, disrespectful culture internally. And I will tell you categorically that until the senior leader, the CEO, or the senior team makes a commitment that that is no longer acceptable, that nothing typically changes. Now, when I say no longer acceptable, what that means is I should state that more proactively. The senior leadership team, with the support, the full support of the CEO or president, makes a firm commitment to the kinds of respectful behaviors that are expected of everyone, regardless of their position within the organization. And until there is a level of accountability to uphold that, very little changes.
All right, I got to ask you some budget questions because HR gets tagged with culture. So if you're an HR leader out there listening, you know what I'm talking about. Everyone in the organization, the executive team, the board, everyone thinks that HR somehow has the pot and the stew and all the ingredients, and somehow they cook up culture, in their spare time, etc. But yet, when you look at an HR budget, if that's true, you look at an HR budget, there's no line item that says culture. So first of all, who should own culture? Right? Who should own culture in an organization, Paul? And how do we fund it? How do we put money and invest in culture? What's the appropriate spend?
I will give you two current examples. First of all, I'm going to let HR folks off the hook because I think it clearly does not reside within HR to define and build culture. Should HR be a strategic partner and an enabling partner in that quest? Absolutely. But it cannot. If it's just an HR mandate, it my experience is it just doesn't go very far, period. There was an article that just came out last week written by Joel Peterson, who's the chairman of JetBlue Airways, and the article was called Building a High Trust Culture, Invest in Respect. I believe that if the senior leaders across an organization's leadership team do not make that commitment together, HR simply is not going to be equipped to do it on their own. As for the investment, this is really where the rubber hits the road. If respect is going to be pursued as an organizational cultural guidepost, it has to permeate the entire organization, not just leaders and managers, not even just leaders, managers, and supervisors. It has to be something that is measured, quantified, goals, improvement goals mapped out, and then more importantly, there have to be resources allocated to help communicate and flesh out what it's going to look like and help people develop the competencies to get there. It is not an overnight. We can't just say, okay, we're respectful all of a sudden and we're there. It is a long-term commitment. It requires behavior change by many people, and it requires reinforcement.
What's the relationship in your mind between a company's values and the concept of respect?
Great question. One of our, what I would call our marquee clients, is the DuPont organization. And it's an organization that we are proud to have had a relationship with going back 5 years at this point. And when DuPont eventually, when they called us, they found us online, they were not looking for someone to, quote, do respect training per se. And they weren't looking for diversity training or anything else like that. What they were looking for was an organization that could support their pursuit of building their core values. And it just so happens that respect for people is one of their core values, along with health and safety, environmental stewardship, and ethics and integrity. What they found was that they had an extremely high percent favorable rating across their organization in terms of people's perceptions of their commitment to health and safety. Now, they also had a high perception with respect to being a respectful organization, but not as high as health and safety. And so what they intentionally did was map out a plan to raise the perception of people's commitment to, so that it was approaching the same level of attention that they had for health and safety. So I think if there is an alignment with the organization's culture and values in particular, it's a much, much cleaner path to get there.
Let's talk a little bit about respect. Can respect only be one way or two way, or if you're really doing it correctly, does it have to be 360, meaning it's not enough to respect our elders and the leadership team, et cetera, or employees, our peers? Maybe we should be respecting our customers. Maybe we should be respecting our vendors. Maybe we should be respecting the planet. Like, when you talk about respect, how do you kind of break people into the concept, and then what do you think the end goal of respect is?
Well, let me flip that around and ask you a question. In your most productive and your most productive days, who are you respected by among the people that you interact with? Just a handful of people, or all the people?
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. You'd like to think you'd like to think that you were respected by everybody.
Exactly. I will tell you. This is just my opinion. But while obviously within the organization, our first come in direct contact with are the places where we can make the most leverage. We have the most leverage. If I'm a supervisor, if I'm a team member, my direct interactions with the people on my team are where we practice. And if we can master those relationships and being respectful there, then we have a much greater likelihood of taking it outside of those, taking it into our vendor channels. How do we deal with I'll give you a great example. Policies and procedures, and if we really, really embrace the value of respect, have to also consider how we treat our vendors. We have there are many large organizations that have horrendous payment terms, even with small suppliers, and they're onerous. So we have had several of our larger clients actually change their vendor payment terms because they realized that they were behaving like bullies by not treating their smaller vendors in ways that allowed them to reasonably manage their cash flow. So at the same time, I'm actually going to be speaking to one of the local chapters of sales and marketing executives. Obviously, how I treat clients and customers has a direct relationship on how likely they are to continue to be my clients and customers. And the great news is most people don't need wholesale corrections. They just need little tweaks in their engagement styles.
Yeah, I thought of the exact same thing. It's like we're inside the organization. We're preaching respect, and that all sounds great. Yet we're paying people, 145, 180 days later. Well, technically, that's not that respect worthy. so it's almost. Hey, I really like that you're thinking about it more holistically than just up, down, and side to side. Let me ask a quick question around. Basically how we look at culture, and I want to take you into the hiring process. So talent acquisition, we have all kinds of wonderful things out there to screen people out and screen people in, assessments and background checks, all kinds of good stuff that's out there. What should we be doing in terms of culture, even more specifically around respect, to screen people in and screen people out?
Well, there's some good news and there's some bad news there. The bad news is that, I actually uncovered this factoid when I was researching for my book, The Respect Effect. Little plug here, and the fact of the matter is that up to 2% of the general population is psychopathic. And they're just not wired to be very, very nice around other people or to consider other people's best interests. And I'm convinced that there are a disproportionately high number of those people that have reached the ranks of senior leadership in some cases, because it does allow you to focus on end results without really focusing on people. And with the Wall Street-driven culture that we often find ourselves victim to, at least here in the United States, that means that people who get the results, regardless of how they get the results, sometimes stay in power.
You know, I just as you were saying, I was thinking quarter-on-quarter growth drives people to be it's such short-term thinking, because they'll throw out everything. They'll throw out values, ethics, morality, whatever.
Mm-hmm, sure.
As long as you hit your quarter growth, then you're a hero, and then we'll look past all the other. And I think most people have done this. If you've listened to the call, you've done this. You know, Timmy over there in sales is not quite a great person, yet Timmy hits his sales quota, and somehow Timmy keeps his job, et cetera. So I think we've all been in this environment and seen this. I want to ask a little bit about your book, though, real quick, because we've got about 10 minutes left, and unintended consequence. So, you've written your book, you get out on trail, you do a couple talks, you kind of throw some things out, you have people come up to you afterwards, you get some autographs, et cetera. What are some of the unintended consequences of your writing this book?
Some of the unintended consequences. Wow, that's a great question, and I've never been asked that before. Probably some of the unintended consequences. I will have to say that I have learned as much in writing the book, and I've learned that I need to kind of do as much work as any other leader. That's probably one of the unintended consequences. I find, one of the things that we talk about, that I talk about in the book, is the importance of accurate awareness. as to how you're perceived by other people. And I do think it's extraordinarily important. Organizations that do not have their leaders and managers participate in 360s, for example, are in many ways walking around blind because most people think they already are respectful. If you were to ask the vast majority of people, are you respectful, 90% plus would say yes. Now, if you ask the people around them how respectful they are, you tend to get a very different flavor of feedback. And so what I've learned is that I have, just like every leader, I've got areas where I do really well and I've got areas where I need a little bit of work. And I think what's happened is it makes my story a little bit more personal and a little bit more emphatic when I'm talking to other leaders. Just because you write a book on something doesn't mean you're a master of it or that you can stop once you get to a certain level. So that's an unintended consequence. And I will also say that probably this is a great, a really great unintended consequence. I've had people reach out to our organization literally from across the globe saying, there's nothing, we've never, ever seen the message quite articulated like this. We'd love to work with you. In fact, one of our newest partners is focusing exclusively on the importance of respect within the law enforcement community. And we're finding that we have a lot of natural allies out there who are kind of looking for a rallying point. So that's another unintended consequence, but it's unintended benefit is a better way to state that.
Nice. What do you think of Net Promoter Score? Does it help us? Does it give us any identifiers around respect?
Ask me that one more time.
Yeah, Net Promoter Score. I wanted to just get your take on, does something like that, some type of satisfaction instrument, is essentially, does it help us get anything, any data as it relates to respect?
Net Promoter Score. Go ahead and you have to define that for me.
Oh, okay. Well, the NPS is kind of a way to do satisfaction, if you will. So it's kind of a tool that does satisfaction 360 degrees. And if you're not as familiar with it, no worries. Let's move to Glassdoor. Do you know Glassdoor?
Yes.
Okay. So their take on transparency, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Like when you look at them and kind of what they're doing in the employment market, and they highlight different companies and people's thoughts around the CEO and the values and the company, etc. Is that helping us create kind of a more of a climate around respect?
I think maybe. I think you're always going to have an element that wants to take advantage and maybe manipulate services or information portals like Glassdoor. At the same time, when there are pervasive trends out there for one company or another that really impact the work experience, then I think they're really good, because what happens is as your most highly sought after employees or employee candidates, they actually are they're much more likely to stay in an organization where they're walking into it with their eyes open, as opposed to have been being told one thing and finding out they hired into something completely different. So I would say if it promotes transparency and helps people to make healthy hiring decisions and with their eyes wide open about what they're getting into culturally, then it's a very good thing.
Awesome. All right, I got to ask an ROI question. So I know you get asked this question a lot, and I mean, you probably already got a pretty good answer, but is there an ROI on culture? And if so, how do we calculate something like that? And if not, how do we get people that are more math, science, technology, engineering-oriented, STEM-oriented, if you will, how do we get them to understand culture and how to finance it?
I think there actually is there is a well-documented ROI on culture. What you have to do, though, is drill down a little bit more deeply to the elements that make your organization successful that actually stem directly from culture. For example, innovation. Can you look at how many, you can actually take a look at how many new ideas your organization is coming up with and tie that back to culture. And that's actually another byproduct of respectful workplaces is that they tend to be much more innovative because people are collaborating at a much higher level. There are the traditional metrics of turnover. Turnover has been an openly discussed and very measurable statistic for decades. And the data as to why people leave an organization has not been a particularly well-kept secret. It's because of compromised relationships with their immediate manager or supervisor, which can be directly affected by respect and other elements within the culture. So the data is there. It's just a matter of whether or not anybody's looking at it.
Yeah, it follows that cliche of people don't leave companies, they leave bad bosses. We've got about 3 minutes left. I'd love to get your take on some examples of respect so that we all kind of have, train our eye as to what is and isn't respect. And so as you obviously research for the book, but also in some of your client stuff, what are just some great examples of respect?
You mean respectful behaviors particularly?
Yes, sir.
So I'll give you just a couple of them. In my book, I highlight what we call the 12 rules of respect, and I won't go through all of those, but there are a couple that I think are really worth noting. The first one is to always pay attention to our nonverbal and extraverbal cues, not just our words. When we are in face-to-face communication with people, we have to make sure that the whole person is communicating respect to them. Eye contact, what I'm doing with my arms, am I sighing or rolling my eyes, things like that, because the way our species evolved, we pay much less attention to what a person is really saying than we do how they're saying it. And if there is a disparity between the two, we will automatically believe the nonverbals and extraverbals a little bit more because our species has recognized that those are better indicators of a person's true intention towards us. So we really have to, that's kind of a nice way of saying you can't really fake it. You have to be there and be present to really communicate it. Another one that I really like is don't be afraid. In fact, practice learning to be wrong, learning that that you don't have to have all the answers. And in fact, when we are around other people and we behave in a manner that basically assumes that we're right and they're wrong, that's probably one of the greatest trigger points for disrespect among other people. And genuinely cultivating curiosity in others as opposed to trying to force our own views upon them is a great way to practice respect.
Awesome.
So those are, but other than that, you have to recognize that respect, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier, respect is an emotional constant between, that doesn't matter who you are, it always feels the same, but the only way you can really demonstrate it to other people consistently is to engage them, get to know enough about them and what respect looks and feels like to them, so that you can behave like that around them.
This is awesome. Listen, we've got to roll out. What is your, what's the best way to reach you? And first of all, thank you for being on the show. I actually, it was a wonderful show today. And maybe your Twitter handle or your email or just the best way to reach you, and we'll roll out to you.
Sure.
A little bit here.
Well, thank you, William. You can, my Twitter handle is at Paul Mashanko. PaulMeshanko. People can look us up online at legacybusinessculturals.com, or the handiwork of one of our best thinking minds in our organization, Melanie Sklarz, actually runs our respectfulworkplace.com site. And it's an amazing site full of resources and blogs, all dedicated towards the pursuit of creating more respectful cultures.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, and everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and thanks for listening to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, William.
Thanks. Pleasure. Thanks, Paul.